This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Got a fetish for fucking you with your skirt on the back street in the backseat of the Yukon. What's taking so long? I'm getting anxious but patiently waiting for you to tell a nigga to move on. Between me and you, we can find each other flying.
Place Me Nation, how the hell you been? Just Rosero coming to you live from this Monday evening on a new episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. It has been a while, Scott Criscola. How are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place Me Nation. Welcome back to episode 487 of the longest running motherfucking episodic gold standard. And you laugh at me 20 episodes ago or 30 episodes ago, but we are literally 13 from five bills.
So that's 6 months for us. So. At this pace.
We are getting it. So the owl to make it.
The pace is going up for sure.
Good to talk to you as always. Why don't we hop right in and bring in the third member of the team this evening.
All right, we might have heard him guffaw there a second ago, so you know that voice, the Golden Pipes. And this is the man I've seen more recently than I've talked to him on Skype, which is amazing, as always, and that is the one and only cowboy. I'm sorry, I'm mixing up my Western term. My one and only sheriff, Pete Schermacher. Pete, how are you?
What's up, boys, and what's up, Place to Be Nation? How's everyone doing?
You were in a car with Pete for 20 hours, JR. So.
No, I was not, but it felt
no,
like...
No, you're lucky, because I can sleep anywhere. And I would be snoring up a storm in that car.
Really, Pete? I didn't know you could sleep anywhere after last year WrestleMania, and I didn't realize.
I was going to say, Pete's head would be in your lap 2 years in a row.
No, it was always great seeing Pete, as always. Pete, did you have a good time at the tailgate?
Oh, man, yeah, I had a blast at the tailgate. Place to Be always does it up big, goes big time. Always goes above and beyond, and, yeah, great time at the tailgate. Had a blast hanging out with you guys on Bourbon Street. Yeah, had a great time, man.
Yeah, it was. It was always good to see the crew. So Mr. Ben Zanny, so Johnny P for a hot second there. And, of course, all the rest of the group. So already looking forward to Jersey next year. So
yes. So, Pete, grade Nick Duke's barbecue skills for me.
Wait, what?
Okay. Grade Nick.
I actually, it felt like he was a little bit out of his element today over there. Like, I would give the years prior were like a 9. This year was like an 8.
That's a harsh scale. The the rib tips were tremendous. Did you get those?
They were incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, did you enjoy Jacob Williams' jambalaya? Do you have any of that?
I loved it, and he also brought the live crawfish. That was great.
That's right. He made a special run for those. Like, he brought the jambalaya, and then people were talking about the crawfish, and he actually went out. He left the tailgate to go buy them and come back with them.
Did he really?
Yeah. Live crawfish. They cooked them, but I'm sure they were live at one point.
Correct. Well, you know what I'm saying. All right.
That's funny.
Mr. Semantics. It was the crawfish.
Yeah, I mean, I had some of that. Sucked the head like a pro.
There's a lot of professional head sucking going on that trip. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That'll be added to the open at 501.
The Place to Be Nation tailgate. You see some professional head sucking.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Hoshimachi. Nick Duke and his travails. Check out not the most recent, but 2 episodes ago of what is it, Popcast? Jen and
Talk
Tim.
Talking Pop. Get it right.
Whatever. Talking Popcast, whatever it is. Anyway, it was really good.
It was. Hey, by the way, you sounded a little. You've had a lot of angst in your voice lately when we've talked about the New Orleans stuff. What's going on?
I was waiting for this. Nothing. I'm glad you guys had a great time, but. But I'm like, you have all this vagueness and, this. And then I'm like, what happened? Oh, nothing. Oh, well, either be vague or don't be vague.
You get a cape sometimes.
Well, I had a girl come up and punch me at a bar. How's that?
Thank you, Pete. Reality is all I ask for. Reality and truth.
Get a cape of the marks.
I had no idea where it came from.
Yeah. Talking Pop was a great episode. Listen to Nick and his so I don't think he finished the story. Did he get his bag from Mark Claire?
Yes, he did. He had to go back he went back, I think, before Mania and got it. They went after the tailgate. They stopped there and got it.
Okay.
Yeah, Claire's hotel was a popular place. Paraphernalia going on.
I heard some interesting things. Some very interesting tidbits on that episode that were revealed. It was very cool. But anyway, check it out. It was really good. Yeah. I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Oh, we had a blast.
Anyway, why don't we?
Well, before you do that, I did have something to talk to you about. I listened to episode 100 mm-hmm. of the main event. I broke my own rule of listening to main event and checked it out. Kidding. But no, I enjoyed the episode quite a bit.
Thank you.
I liked the format was genius. I'm not sure where you came up with it, but it was great. But no, I'm like it. I really liked it. I thought the Core Four plus Brother Nate really stepped up. It was great to hear them all together again. So I just want to give you some props on making 100 episodes. Not an easy feat to do. I think you mentioned it. Are you only the? Is that only the third show of the Place to Be Nation group to make 100?
I'm pretty sure, right? Us, Fanboys, and Main Event. I think that's it.
Yeah. How far did Titans get, Pete? I know you guys had a number, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I never named. Like, that's like a Kelly trivia thing. Right. They kept track.
Oh, you know what?
The
NBA team, I think that they hit 100. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense.
So anyway, it's rarefied air. Sure. So congrats on keeping it going. Yeah. It's been a good 4 years, and yeah, I liked hearing the whole crew back together. I thought they all had some pretty good moments. I liked Ben's monologue that you promptly no-sold. That was enjoyable. I liked that. It was good, of course, to hear Reesh and even that slob Jordan Duncan. It was good to hear.
I think maybe me and Tim have hit over 100 now on this week.
Oh, yeah. You have to have, I'm sure. That's been going for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Everybody, please check it out. It was a lot of fun. And I was curious, JR, because I had known ahead of time. I will give you your props, my PIC, because after the Aubrey disaster, the very next episode was you and Brother Nate making your debuts.
That's right.
So
I bring
kudos.
In the hot talent.
You saved the ship from fucking sinking from the previous
episode.
And then
I saved it again by delivering Nate to you as a co-host. Another sinking ship.
Well, it's because I won't.
Will, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I'm still blocked by him on Twitter, Aubrey. And,
you're not missing much.
I mean, I'm still fighting. Someone who's going to take a follower on, still DM me and be assholes.
Oh, that's funny. Anyway, yes, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Check out episode 100 of Main Event. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
And another big. I mean, 500. That's going to be very epic. So stay tuned in 2021 when we get to episode 500.
Indeed. And I do have one more New Orleans question for Pete. Mm-hmm. Claire hair or Cawthon hair, Pete? What team are you on?
Ooh, man. That's tough. Because I get jealous about hair because I always shave mine down because I don't have any. Claire has that, I don't know, surfer dude, like kind of like Spicoli. From Fast Times vibe going with the hair, and he has the whole attitude going. But oh yeah, but Cawthon's man is we're very quaff.
It is quaff. It is the definition of quaff.
Yeah, where you can like you can do a walk on Dynasty, and not knowing what bat and I.
All right, so it sounds like your team Cawthon then.
You can pick it. Depends on the day.
Okay,
I could probably flip a coin.
Okay, it's fair. It's a fair assessment.
From a distance and looking at pictures, it seems like I would have to go, and you know, I love Claire to death, but I feel like Graham, like, his hair just naturally is that, whereas Claire needs to have to kind of do things to make his look.
It's kind of the opposite. Graham's he's kind of got it slicked up and twirled around. Claire is just naturally fall. I mean, he had literally probably been up to like 7 a.m., and then he rolls into the tailgate, and I mean, he's got his hood up, and he looks like death, and then he pulls the hood down. And this has to be what the apostles felt like when Jesus rose from the dead on Easter. I was like, he just pulls the hood back and he's back to life. Right. And it's like, it just felt like this aura come about him. It was like, this is glorious. This beautiful man and
like
this hair and those eyes. He is, I have no qualms saying that Claire is a gorgeous human being. So yeah, it was great. It was quite the morning. A lot of beauty in that room. Pete was not part of it. Pete was not part of it.
Yeah, I'm not a pretty boy, so I do everything as like at least anything that make it easier on me. Where I don't haven't owned a hairbrush in probably 15 years now because I shaved the hair down. So I'm pretty. I wear shirts that are like you throw in the dryer and they're wrinkle free. That's how I roll.
Oh, Petey, I love you.
I love you. Imagine using that much cosmetics and stuff in my hair.
Cosmetics. How cosmetic. All right. Why don't we go from 2018 to 30 years ago.
Oh, boy.
To 1988 for this evening's festivities. As we are one day removed from the big events that happened up in Hamilton, Ontario at the Royal Rumble, we go to our office, JR. And that is, of course, Madison Square Garden, January 25th, 1988. And our first foray into the building for 1988. And it was the next day. No other shows on this night, believe it or not. They did not there was no split up. I don't know if roster got the night off or whatever, which is strange considering some of the matchups in this card. You wonder where everybody went. But there was no, according to our fine coiffed friend Graham Cawthon in the history of WWE.com, there were no other shows on this night. So we were only at the Garden. And it was a sellout, 19,750. So any other tidbits, JR, before we begin?
Let me check the old greeny facts. Just one here, that Vince McMahon substituting in for Gorilla Monsoon this month, as you may have noticed, and that's because the Gorilla had a heart attack, a mild heart attack that took him out of action and left us with Vince calling the show. So I get some thoughts on old Vinnie Mac as we move toward the end of the show. But good, what do you got?
Yes, we do have a fun fact. Do you know, and Mr. Titan, maybe you can guess on this one, do you know the date of the last MSG House show that Vincent Kennedy McMahon was play-by-play?
No clue.
I'm going to say
you don't have to give me an exact date. How about a month and a year?
Let's go December 86.
I'll say June 82.
February 16th, 1983.
Ooh, close.
Wow.
Was his last show. The main event of that was a six-man. It had Backlund in it. I think Andre was on that show as well. But that was the last house show. The next one in March of 83, Gorilla started doing play-by-play. In fact, Vince and Gorilla did that show together in February of 83. And then starting in March, Vince went to the Vince went to TV and Gorilla did the house shows. So it's been over, just under 5 years was the last time Vincent Kennedy McMahon was in, well, in the Garden on camera, not counting, because I know someone's going to say it, not counting standing at the Gorilla position. It doesn't count. No. Like legitimate.
Right.
On
involved
camera.
In the show. Well, was that MSG too, though, where he received the award? Wasn't that MSG? The fucking self-made award?
Yes, that
the
was.
Greatest man alive, whatever it was.
Yes, made for his dad. Yeah. What was that? Like, that was what, June? I know, right? Well, it was right after his dad died. So that was like June 85, I think, something like that. Yeah, that's true, too. So in an official on-air position.
Also,
we're
here,
so,
and you mentioned the Titans, shout out quick to the great Bruno Sammartino retrospective. Brought Parv out of retirement for that thing, Pete.
Yeah.
It was pretty much all the original crew, right? It was Pete, Johnny, Kelly, and Parv talking the career of Bruno Sammartino. So be sure that is a must-listen from a crew that probably, besides like Dave Meltzer, may have watched the most Bruno's footage of the last 10 years or so. So, nice work there, and be sure to check that out on the Pro Wrestling Only feed.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. As we reached out to Parv, he's big timing on the political bandwagon now, and he has a girlfriend, so I don't think he has much time for the wrestling. But for Bruno, he did.
He came right off of Name and Prince Louis there for over in England, and hopped on the show.
Prince Louis. And check out, by the way, for those that haven't seen it, speaking of Bruno, if you haven't watched both the Andre doc on HBO and, of course, the Bruno one that they put on the network last week, two unbelievable pieces of television to watch. JR, did you catch both of them, the Andre and the Bruno?
I've not watched the Andre yet. The Andre. Okay.
The Andre is incredible.
You mean, or the HBO?
No, the Andre on HBO one, yeah.
Yeah, no, I have not watched that yet. Yeah. I still have to watch that.
Okay.
And I did not catch all of Bruno yet. I did, though. So the day he died, I was at my parents' house, and I had loaded up the WWE Network on my dad's Roku when I got it for him, but I don't think he's ever used it. So I told him that Bruno died, and I put it on, and he ended up watching like a bunch of it, even after I left, the Bruno collection, so all the different matches and stuff. So
nice.
I was even bothering Pete about who – my dad was asking who the ring announcer was, and I had no clue. And it took some research for us to figure out. It was Kelly, I think.
Joe
McHugh.
Kelly had to throw the life preserver.
It was not Joe McHugh. It was – what was his name? Friendly something? Remember? Do you remember it all, Pete?
Not a clue.
It was Kelly named
it. Oh, it wasn't Joe McHugh.
Yeah, it was – it was the Bruno versus – I think it was a Spiros Arion match. It's not McHugh. And my dad was asking who it was. He was trying to remember. So it's funny because he said it was something like, oh, you kind of didn't realize at the time, like, how fake it looked. That was his comment. Compared to, like, now, you know, like, just basically at the time you were so bought in. But looking back, so much of it is, like, just obvious.
Yeah.
So it was just funny to hear his take on that because he's not someone who's really watched much wrestling in the last, whatever, 20 years since I...
Oh, no, that's interesting because, I mean, that's how they did it. They protected kayfabe and they treated it as real and such. And as that, you were able to pretend it was real and go along with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he watched pretty religiously growing up and into the 70s and 80s. And him and I would watch, you know, I wouldn't say he watched it, but he would tolerate me watching until at least like the late 90s when I finally started kind of watching on my own Raw and pay-per-view. So, yeah, but he hasn't watched much in a while. So it was an interesting take from him. But, yeah, he watched a bunch of it, so it was kind of cool to have him check that out.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, but please, yeah, definitely check out the Andre doc on HBO. Did you catch that one, Pete, the Andre doc?
Yeah, we actually reviewed it on Worldcast, Kelly, Johnny, and I, and I absolutely loved it. I think I like the Bruno doc even more, maybe because I'm more attached to Bruno as opposed to Andre. I think that might be why. But I thought the Bruno doc was incredible. And anytime you hear Bruno talk, I mean, it's a story. I mean, his whole story is incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't know of any better. And when you hear him talk about it, it's so much more convincing than in like third person because of how... You know, he's just like his promos. I mean, it's buy into everything. Bruno could tell you he could leap tall buildings in a single bound, and you'd believe him because he's so credible and stuff. And his whole life story is just nuts and awe inspiring and stuff. It makes you feel like a slouch for being yourself as opposed to Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, well, I've been to two Hall of Fames, and his speech. In person was my favorite. Like his speech was amazing to witness person at MSG. Gus, sorry.
Yeah. No, I was agreeing with you 100%.
Well, no, before
the other thing, the crowd sucked, but the other thing I liked about both was I'm pretty sure he was, I don't know if he was on the Andre doc. I'm trying to think back. I don't think so, but he's definitely in the Bruno doc. We need more clips of Vince Sr. There's just not enough Vince Sr. video. He had to have done more interviews because when you hear the Godfather talk, you know, you're put over. And I thought of you, JR, when they show the picture of Toots. It's like, oh, Toots, hey, sitting at the fucking bar. But please definitely check out both the Andre and Bruno docs. Andre's on HBO, and then and the Bruno doc is on, obviously, the network. All right. And what's sad about that is we're almost done with Bruno. Bruno, I think, leaves the company right around this time.
Yeah, I don't know if we see him again, do we? Yeah. I don't know if he's on
I don't think
that.
So.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's – I don't think he's wrestling.
Is he at Halloween Havoc 89? Is that the Halloween Havoc?
Yep, that's 89 where he did the. He was a special ref.
Yeah, so he's gone. Within a year and a half, he's in WCW or NWA. So, all right. Okay, so we have Vince and Lord Alfred and Bobby, who's got some kind of like weird ascot on or something. It's like,
it was an odd night overall, and Vince is already trolling Bobby like right in the intro.
Yeah. All right, let's dive in, JR. What's our opener?
I guess if we have to talk about this opener, Mr. Casey and Mr. Estrada, here we are to open things up. Not the strongest of starts to 1988. Casey back on the scene against our old hanger on, Mr. Estrada. We get some feeling out, basic holds as Bobby calls Casey dumb, which always makes me laugh. Casey heats up with a flurry and Estrada settles things down. Gets some mat work by both as Vince and Bobby are rambling through band and concert jokes. Estrada turns the tide and gets a two off a punch from the middle rope. Starts to mix together some basic strikes. Casey comes right back and grabs hold of the arm and targets that for a bit. Quickly turns to the leg as Bobby talks about watching the Royal Rumble contract signing during his vacation. If you remember, that was part of the gag that Ted DiBiase had sent him on vacation as part of the purchase.
Correct.
Casey slugs away, lands a nice pile driver, but Al rips him for wasting time celebrating. Estrada goes to the eyes and kicks away, and they keep ebbing and flowing. Vince tries to find out how much Bobby got from selling Andre, but Bobby plays coy and just says, I can do whatever I want for the rest of my life. Estrada punches away and then slinks Casey to the floor. Casey comes back. Sunset flip for two, unloads some right hands, but misses a cross body. Casey blocks a neck breaker, hits a shoulder breaker for the win. Fine with some cohesion, but I found this real boring. Got the job done. The highlight was the pile driver that was in there, and Casey just keeps kind of floating around without really much going on. Half a star, Scott.
Again, I like I said, I'm just getting the screen load here, but I'm just perplexed that there's no other house shows on this evening, so the roster should be somewhere, and the hole fillers that are in this show are just mind-boggling. Like, I don't understand why we need, like, this. I gave it a half star, too. What the fuck do we need these two guys for? I mean, there's no other house shows around tonight, so where is everybody? Why the hell do we need these two clowns? Then we had a couple other schlubs later on in the show. Why do we need all these like, retreads? I mean, it's, like, literally almost 10 years to the day that I watched an episode of All-Star Wrestling on the network and fucking Jose Estrada's jobbing to somebody. So it's like, I mean, really? I mean, where is everybody? I just didn't get it.
Winter vacation. I mean,
and yeah, I guess, yeah, they all went on vacation with Bobby at, I don't know where they were. What was it, Nassau or something, or the Bahamas? But from the first get-go, and I know, JR, you said you were going to mention more Vince as the evening progresses, but it is evident that Vince is terribly out of practice with actual matches. We talked about on the last Saturday's main event, we'll obviously talk about it next week when we do the big show, that Vince is good in these short spots, promoting things, not necessarily really having to care about the in-ring action. He's got usually has Jesse next to him. So we don't really need – he doesn't really have to go move for move like Gorilla does, who does an excellent job of it. But Vince, you know, having to do this match – by the way, the official match length, unfortunately, what do we lose out of our lives? 10:06. Ugh. You know, 10:06 is not too long for Vince. But when you don't have – you know, Bobby only does so much and, you know, Alfred's not that funny. So when Vince has to really carry the commentary of a match this long, you can obviously tell that he's out of practice. So it was a little bit of a slog to try to get through this first match, besides the fact that the two guys in the ring suck. That the commentary was definitely hurting, but I don't know what you think, Pete, because you guys listen to a boatload of Vince, you know, 80 through 82 and 80, and obviously into early 83, but he obviously struggled to try to kind of get into the swing of things on something that wasn't, you know, quick hits like he does when he does national TV.
You know, I agree with you, and yeah, he's definitely out of rut calling the action and setting up the future cards and stuff like that. Yeah, he was definitely not old Vince and stuff. I kind of like the match better than you guys. I give it a star and a half. I will say both guys lack charisma, but I thought it was a solid match. I thought they did a little solid mat work. I like Casey working the arm, and then he transitions fine to the leg. I thought Casey's pile driver was really nice, and he got a nice pop. I enjoyed the eye rake setting up the heat only for Casey to do a drop toe hold, but then another eye rake does set up the heat. I thought Casey took a really nasty bump to the floor. That was real nice. It makes a nice comeback and then goes over. And I thought a lot of these matches were bad matches throughout the card. Like, this was not a good match. They were lucky that most of them only lasted like 10 minutes or so. We didn't get a whole lot. We didn't get any of them like long 15, 20 minute really bad scrub matches where I've joined you guys and we've had to watch. So we can count our blessings it was only 10 minutes. Because I think at one card we had like three or four of them that went over 15 minutes that were just terrible. So I felt they filled the time well enough for what they needed to do for an opener and an MSG.
You love these matches, Pete. I don't know. You love them.
Crazy.
Throw 22 fucking bums in the ring and let them work an arm for 10 minutes and you...
Terrible. So there you go.
I love an arm. I love working an arm.
You suck in crawfish head like no other when you see these men.
Scott Casey was sucking Jose Estrada's head.
Hey.
Jesus. Okay.
So there you go, Scott Casey.
All right, let's get to our next match here. I'm curious how Pete takes this one. And that is Sam Houston taking on Danny Davis. Business not picking up on this card. Davis pretty much jobber now. No Harford Nation. I like how they've slowly like gotten away from him as they realize what a loser he was. Like when he was helping them out and actually useful, like they were his buddies. And now they've slowly, we'll see you later, Danny. Houston gets a decent little pop. He two steps to the ring. We saw these guys go at it in the Rumble as well. Davis bails right away as usual, going to his usual stalling. Davis gets in the ring. Houston starts to work the arm. Davis tries to swing momentum, but Houston keeps cutting him off, working the arm some more. Davis is able to leverage Houston to the floor. Sam takes a rough bump out there, and back inside, Davis goes through some strike-based offense as Bobby runs through his credentials, including stating that he's undefeated, which made me laugh. Davis blocks a comeback by going to the eyes and gets a suplex for two. Houston battles back but comes up empty on a charge at the corner. Davis goes back to a simple weak attack, grabbing near falls wherever he can. Davis bitches at the ref about a slow count. That allows Houston to sneak up and get an inside cradle for the win. This legitimately like put me to sleep. Like I may as well have been Pete at WrestleMania 33. Just out cold. A whole bunch of nothing. Davis is cooked. No heat. He sucks. His run is done, and Houston's just whatever at this point. Moving on. Dud. Pete, please. What do you think?
I give it a star. I thought Houston was working the arm early. I thought he kept things active on the arm. Everything I liked that was from Sam, which was what you need from an underneath baby face. Davis did absolutely really nothing here, and I give it a star. I mean, it was what it was.
It's fucking star.
I mean, a star is under average. Two stars is average.
It sucked. It was worthless. It was literally a worthless match.
Nah.
It had no worth.
8 minutes.
Sam had
8 minutes and 8 seconds.
Promise. He did the little two-step outside the ring.
You're a mark for the Cowboys and the Sheriffs.
When he was on offense, it was fine. But when he had the sell for Davis's weak shit, that was bad. Yeah.
Davis is brutal.
No more rib tips for you. That was a dud. 8 minutes and 8 seconds. We'll never get back. We got more important shit to talk about, so let's move on. I will say one thing, and when we've had Mr. D'Amato on for the pay-per-views, he always says, and I kind of agree with him a little bit, that northern crowds like the Garden aren't crazy unless you're Dusty in like 77 through 80. Garden crowds and Northeast crowds are not crazy about like cowboy gimmicks, and then obviously Sheriff, they'd probably hate you with this grade, but.
But I'm an original New Yorker, so
that's true. That is
cowboy gimmick.
They love the smoking guns, pal.
What?
I said they love the smoking guns, pal.
A lot, pal. So it's just garbage. Let's move on to the next match.
Okay. Junkyard Dog taking on Butch Reed. So finally, we're starting to at least get some interesting matches, even though JYD is quickly circling the drain. Reed seems to be on the come up a little bit, even though he stalled. Reed and Slick straight out to Jive Soul Bro, so we got a win already. Bobby says it's his favorite song on the album, Pile Driver album. Reed has some great energy as he gets the ring, posing and taunting the fans with some vigor, probably due to the song, I would think, that would fire anyone up. Dog comes out to grab them cakes and gets a warm welcome as Bobby calls him Fred Sanford. JYD stalks Slick and then catches Reed trying to attack, drops him and knocks him outside with some right hands. JYD follows out, runs Reed to the post, and shoves him back inside. The Dog clubs away until Reed bails back out. When he returns, JYD works the shoulder, using headbutts as part of his attack. Reed eventually goes to his tights and uses a foreign object to jab JYD to take over. Reed levies some heavy blows and a hard leg drop before clotheslining the Dog across the top for two. Reed works through his offense, varying things up, but is unable to finish the Dog off. JYD battles back and hits some headbutts and chases Slick around the ring, and they end up inside where Reed rolls up JYD and hooks the tights to steal the win. Just another meandering match. Reed's offense was good in spots, but JYD just offers nothing at this point, just ambling around at half speed. Sloppy and poorly executed. I went a half star on this. And it's sad, and Pete, I kind of want your take on this as well when you get there, like what this match would have meant like 6 years earlier, you know, in the right territory, like what this would have been versus this, just JYD just looking burnt at this point. So, Scott, what did you think of the match and that point as well?
You actually took that point that I was going to do it as well. So good call. 5:26 your time. I gave it a half star. And yeah, if this was 1982, it would probably main event the Superdome. I don't think there's any question about that. Big time Mid-South feud back in the day. I think there's a couple of matches with them on the network in the Mid-South shows. But now, I mean, Butch Reed is still in pretty good shape, but JYD is just a mess right now. The good thing about it was that it wasn't that long. Again, only just under 5.5 minutes, perfect length. The Fred Sanford line made me fucking laugh. That was really good. And the crowd is early on. You could tell that they were like, "We're getting handed this fucking garbage." And at least JYD at least still has the name strength to at least kind of cook a crowd a little bit and boost them. I mean, then once the bell rings, it's just – it's right down the drizzler. But, yeah, if this was 1982, you know, they could sell out, you know, Biloxi or, you know, Baton Rouge or any of those shows that, that Watts used to run because those guys were red hot down there. But now it's just – it's pretty rough. It's pretty rough. So, yeah, Pete, your thoughts on the match and what these guys could have and probably did do 6 years ago or six
years
before.
As a Mid-South guy and Houston was part of the Mid-South territory – technically, it was 1983 when the feud started, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, it would have been huge. I mean, they did headline the Silverdome. I mean, the Superdome. They did business in Houston. They were on that when they had the NWA on demand. They had three matches that came up when they were headlining Houston: a ghetto street fight, a chain match, and a regular match. They worked in tag. They did everything. They did. Paint the loser gets painted yellow. I mean, they did so many gimmick matches, cage matches. I mean, they ran the gauntlet on this feud to death because it drew so much money. Easily one of the top feuds of all time in Mid-South, probably an easy top 10 or 15 feud when it came to drawing money. It was huge business. It's sad you see it like here, and then remember in like 89 we brought up earlier. On the big draw with Steamboat and Flair at the Clash where they did 55 minutes or whatever. You had Dog and Reed on the undercard of that, and they didn't draw anything in New Orleans then. So it's just kind of a sad watching this. I give it a star. Reed bumped big early for the Dog, and I kind of like Dog's headbutts to the shoulder and Dog, you know, kind of focusing his punches at the shoulder. The foreign object sets up the heat, but my God, that finish was just terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. They should be ashamed of themselves. That was a terrible finish. But yeah, it's so sad to watch this. And it's kind of, I mean, it's almost like watching an old-timer baseball game in a way when these guys were once legends and they're larger than life at one point, and then here they're just. Especially Dog in the way he is at this point. He's just, you know, blown up from all the drugs that he's put in his body and stuff. Just terrible.
If they had to keep Dog around, like, what do you think of him if they just would have stuck him in a tag team with someone? Like, we've seen some tag matches. I think we saw one last month. Wasn't he in a tag? What was the one against Demolition? Wasn't it him and was it Billy Jack? I think I thought we saw him in a team with somewhere. I don't know. Anyway,
well, I know he teamed well with Steamboat for a while, partnering when they did the Morocco Fuji feud.
Right, but even more recently, I thought he was in one recently. It was I think it was someone else. Anyway, I would have maybe stuck him as the hot tag in a team at this point if you wanted to keep him around. I'm thinking ahead. Sorry, he's not in a tag, but he's kind of part of one. I think if you put him as the hot tag where he's not having to carry a match and bump around and work too much, I think if you're going to keep him around, that would have maybe been a better fit for him. Let him stand on the apron, let him come in, get the early shine, then go to the apron, come in, get the hot tag. Like, I think that's more suited for where he's at as a worker at this point.
I would have just fired him because, I mean, he was doing...
Well, yeah, I mean, if they had to keep, if they wanted to keep him around, you know, if they felt like they wanted to have him there for his name value, I would have put him in a role like that.
And he's got to be gone pretty soon, too, if I'm mistaken.
He's around for most of the year, I think. I don't think he leaves like November.
Okay. Yeah. I think he ends up, he disappears during Survivor Series because he was in the build for that, and then they had to do some, you know, he wasn't there then, yeah.
Yeah, I just saw what you were talking about, JR, and we'll see that in a couple weeks. I mean, he's not healthy. Yeah, and obviously he's like, you know, 12th on the babyface chain when 2 years before he was maybe – or 3 years before he was like second in the babyface list. Now he's like maybe ninth.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bloom
first
is definitely –
He's first at the Golden Corral buffet. That's about the only thing he's first.
Yeah. You can forget Bloom falling off the rose. The fucking garden's dead.
Yeah.
And it shows what a great worker Terry Funk was because he carried him in that feud. I mean, actually, him and Tito had a good tag at WrestleMania – two against the Dog and
oh yeah
for the Funks.
Yeah, no, it was excellent. Boy, But things have definitely fallen. Speaking of falling, I don't know if this this car could get any worse.
Oh, God. I mean, imagine Vince, like, this is the show he had announced, and he's watching this sludge go out match after match. All right, up next, we have a red hot feud continuing on. That is Omar Atlas taking on Dusty Wolf, and those are not typos. Omar Atlas, born Omar Mahares on April 22nd, 1938, in Caracas, Venezuela. Mahares became involved in amateur wrestling as a youth and later competed and won a silver medal at the Pan American Games in 1958. Fucking Todd Weber was covering that for the local Sacramento Bee. Spending eight months in Spain, he eventually moved on to Colombia, spent the next 4 years wrestling throughout Latin America as well as returning to Spain from time to time. 1962, one of several South American wrestlers brought to Houston by Ciclone Negro and billed as promoter Morse Segal as Negro's storyline brother Omar Negro. Leaving Houston a year later, he toured the U.S. with the NWA, hit around some various regional territories, joined the WWF in 1984, and in 1993 eventually retired and went into law enforcement as a probation officer. In recent years, he worked with convicts as a security monitor in Texas and honored by the Cauliflower Alley Club at the annual banquet in 2004.
It sounds like you almost said the Cawthon Alley Club.
Right, I wish.
You get the Golden Quaff Award.
So if he retired in 93, how fucking old was he?
Well, you mentioned he's 50 in this match. Morris Segal in Houston. That's before Paul Bosch.
Yeah.
I mean,
you said he was born in 38. That means he's 50 here.
Right.
Or close to 50. Jesus Christ. He was 55 when he retired. Fucking A. How old's Dusty Wolf? No.
Well, we're about to find out. Born Barry Dale Wolf on July 18th, 1962, so a bit younger. Debuted July 5th in San Antonio, Texas, trained by fellow wrestler Ken Johnson, who helped Shawn Michaels enter professional wrestling. After retiring completely from wrestling, Wolf attended the San Antonio branch of Texas A&M, where his grades were sufficient to qualify him for membership in the Phi Alpha Theta Honor Society in 2012, graduated with a bachelor's degree in history. He then attended Sam Houston State University, where he obtained a master's degree. Taught history classes at Northwest Vista College until 2015, has actually published a number of books and essays about wrestling since 2008. So there you go.
He used to be real real active on. He used to be, as him and Ken Timms had a website, like right when the web first kind of blew up, the wrestling web. And they were very open and talked about all a lot of inside stuff. It was interesting at the time, but he was kind of bitter.
Yeah. Well, he was a jobber, so it's not a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I don't know what universe and year this is, but here we are. Wolf has some bizarre bedspread cape on that gets mocked by everybody. Omar Atlas doesn't have the most marketable look at all, and he's, whatever, 80 here. They trade some blows. Atlas hits an atomic drop for two, works the arm. Bobby vows that Andre will win the title and talks about his decision to sell the contract yet again. Atlas keeps in control, fighting through Wolf, trying to grab the arm. Bobby and Vince are talking about anything they can think of to avoid this match, including Andre, David Letterman, Matilda. Al shits on Wolf as he works the arm, and Bobby piles on two. Bobby talks about the Terry Garvin School of Self-Defense, and Vince jumps all over that, and we get a long conversation about it. Plenty of innuendo. And the match is so aimless and pointless. Wolf goes to a chin lock as the crowd is just wishing for death at this point, I think. Vince says our big tag main event is supposed to be next, but Andre is wreaking havoc in the back, and that could cause issues. Atlas eventually rolls up Wolf and gets the win to put us all out of our fucking misery. Just dog shit, as boring as it gets. Wolf is terrible, and Atlas is barely better. I want a dud on this, Pete. Please. Please.
I want a dud.
Thank
you. I want a dud, too.
Thank you.
I was thinking, like how I said earlier, like none of the matches felt long. That was until this one, where the crowd is actively booing the match and booing Atlas when he gets the win. Side note, Dusty Wolf shows up at some of the local indies here in Texas. I ran into him here and there. But I doubt I'll talk about this match with him. Terrible.
Where, for the love of God, is the rest of the fucking roster? If there's no other house shows on this night, where, for the love of God, are they? Are they all at DiBiase's beach house or summer rental residence? I mean, good grief. Is no one around? I mean, Jose Estrada is one thing because, I mean, at least he's still like an active jobber even on the Cindies, I think. I mean, I remember seeing him on like Superstars and Challenge at that point. That's fine. But Omar fucking Atlas? Really? There's nobody else in the goddamn building. Nobody. Anybody. Jake? Anybody. Where the hell is everybody? Like ridiculous. What were they stuck in? Was there a snowstorm in Hamilton that half the fucking planes couldn't leave? I don't get it. Fortunately, this match, I believe, was shorter than the... Yes, this was 7:29, which is slightly shorter than that disgusting mess that we watched.
Felt like
37:29,
honestly.
It really did. I mean, this is just dreadful. Vince is probably thinking to himself, wow, I'm glad I booked myself this fucking pile of garbage. Bad enough I can't do play-by-play for, like, real wrestling matches anymore anyway, and I'm fucking stuck doing this. I mean, it's just dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking. I mean, we're in a hot time right now. You know, pumped up for this big show coming up in a couple weeks in Indianapolis. We got some heavy shit going on here. And we're getting this kind of drivel? I mean, just absolutely dreadful. I don't get it.
I mean, if you maybe just have like one of these two matches and then make the rest, just give the good guys some time. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. Like, let someone else go like 25 minutes instead of 15 and then, you know, tack on this 8. Like, why even have the match?
I don't know if I want anyone on this roster, on this show, to go 25 minutes.
I think I'd rather do that than 7 minutes of this fucking dreck. Atlas and Wolf.
Exactly. I just don't understand where everybody
is. The big tag main could have went long. Longer, right?
I don't know, man.
I mean,
how about the last match? Even the last match.
Now, when we did the Rumble, we had said that there was a house show in Halifax that night, and I don't think anybody from that show is here. So maybe there's a weather issue. There was a weather issue in Halifax, and maybe some of those guys, Demolition, and some of those guys maybe were supposed to be here.
It would make sense. Maybe. I mean, this is I can't imagine they booked to this card straight up.
Yeah, because every single big superstar that's here was in Hamilton at the Rumble.
Right.
Everybody that wasn't there and was in Halifax is not here.
Yeah, so maybe there's some issue. Yeah,
there had to have been some weather issue. Maybe it was a blizzard or something in Halifax and they couldn't make it. Because I can't honestly think Vince and these guys could look in the mirror and go, hey, pal, let's do a little Dusty Wolf and Omar Atlas. I mean, I just can't see it. If you're bad enough, you're giving us Jose Estrada and fucking Scott Casey. And then, I mean, Danny Davis and Sam Houston, I mean, that match is fine on paper because they're at least you know, lower mid-card guys. The match itself just sucked. But what the fuck is this? I mean... Yeah, there had to have been some kind of weather issue or something in Halifax, and that other house show from the night before couldn't make it. Because, I mean, none of the guys from that show are here. Everybody that's here was from the night before in Hamilton at the Rumble. So that's the only feasible explanation. I can't even fathom that Vince had to get these fucking stiffs.
Well, let's see. On this day, there was no, according to this Weather Underground history view, there was nothing, mm-hmm. no precipitation in Halifax. Let's see. No, I mean, they got like an inch of snow the day before. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm just befuddled at how there's not another house show that night anywhere else in the country. And, I mean, you had no Heart. Let's see. There was no Heart Foundation, no Demolition, no Savage. I mean, for Christ's sake, you don't stick Savage on this? I mean, good grief. So,
they did give guys time off here and there. Maybe they didn't want to also break up where they're traveling from, where it costs the company more money.
I could see that, Pete, from a common sense perspective, but it just seems very fishy that the only big superstars that are here in the building tonight are the ones that were at the Royal Rumble.
Well, I think Pete's point is that was one crew, and then the Halifax crew was another one.
I mean, that's true. I mean, that's a fair assessment.
And they sold out, so it's not like they needed to add
right.
to the show.
Yeah, I mean, they figured out we're sold out. Why are we going to fly guys in? Let's just get these local bums to come in here. And I mean, it's a different time, and we got to, you know, like Pete's mentioning, but God, it's, I mean, two of these matches, like, I get
what
it.
What day was this? What day was, I mean, what, not
it's
the day, but what day was this show?
Monday.
It's a Monday.
It was Monday.
So maybe these guys were in New York doing TV or, Atlas and Wolf and Estrada, and they were able to make the show.
Yeah, that's true, too. Anyway, we're belaboring this match more than
it's still trash.
Either way. Yeah, it's still fun.
All right, so next up we have a big power match, and that is between the Magnificent, formerly Magnificent. I don't think he's quite called The Rock yet, is he, Don Morocco? I don't think they've started saying that. But he's taking on the one.
They called him The Rock on this.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah, no, he is The Rock. Yeah, he is The Rock. Yep.
Well, he looks like one, that's for sure. So, and he's taking on the one-man Gang. Big power match featuring two of the Rumble finalists as well. Gang has looked pretty good since debuting. He stayed strong, intimidating presence. Morocco's face turn has really rejuvenated him in the ring. I thought he's looked much better than I had remembered him being during these early face days. Morocco has superstar Billy Graham with him tonight. The crowd is all fired up as Billy hobbles out on his cane. Bobby bitches about Graham not having a manager's license as we settle in. Morocco fires away at the bell, rattling Gang all around the ring and starting to work the leg. Morocco mounts Gang on the mat and batters him with fists and then goes back to the leg again. Bobby says the Gang may be in trouble as he usually puts his opponents away quickly, but this is lingering. Slick comes by and says he's going to protest to Tunney about Graham being at ringside and the ref missing tons of rule infractions. Morocco keeps grinding at the leg until Gang buries him in the corner with back elbows to slow him down. Gang is then hobbling but starts to club away, and Morocco slugs right back at him, leading to a fun back and forth. Morocco shoves Gang in the corner and hops on his back with a sleeper, driving Gang to his knees. Slick gets on the apron, but Graham comes over and yanks him down, and the ref is tied up. But Butch Reed sneaks in and clobbers Rock with the cane, and Gang falls on top for the win. Reed and Slick attack Graham after the match, battering his leg and having Gang splash him until Morocco makes a save. This is a pretty good big man slugfest, lots of heavy bombs. Nice selling by Gang as well. I like the finish. You keep the Reed and Graham stuff boiling, especially here in MSG where it's been a pretty focused feud in late 87. I thought both guys looked pretty good. Morocco continues to be a revelation for me in this face role. It's really woken him up. And the crowd was into it too. I think they were thrilled to have something not shit finally. So I went 2 stars on this. I liked it as a power match, Scott.
I gave it 1.5 stars. It was good. It was okay. Better than what we've seen. Morocco's definitely still over, and I have enjoyed his matches. Is this the MSG debut of Jive Soul Bro? Have we heard it in the garden yet? Probably, right? Seemed like we hadn't, because when I heard it, I went, "Oh wow, Jive Soul Bro." I'm guessing he's used it, probably, right? With like Butch Reed or something.
Most likely. I think so.
Anyway,
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure they've used it because Power Driver's been out a while. Anyway, I thought it was fine. It was a decent match. Nothing crazy. Gang is definitely over. I mean, I know they used him quickly out of the gate when he got here, you know, with doing the Hogan shows, or the Hogan matches on that circuit. And he's still pretty over. I agree with you about Morocco. I don't know what it is. Maybe he just got bored with being a heel, and maybe he was just fat and lazy. I don't know. But he definitely seems out of nowhere to be much more motivated, even if he's still, you know, not great work rate shakes. But... definitely more motivated.
Because the heel's calling the match, and now as a babyface, he's got to do what the heel's telling him to do.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. But anyway, Pete, go ahead.
That's a good point. Pete.
1.5 stars.
Well, I also feel like he's wrestling with more energy. Like he was very lazy as a heel, and I don't know if that was just he was really playing into the gimmick or if he just got more motivated. I think what you're saying, Pete, probably helps too, the heel calling the match. But I also think he's working with more energy in there. Like he's bouncing around more and rolling around. And that's the main thing I've noticed with him as a face so far.
And as a face, he's set up to shine, you know, too. Right. So that doesn't hurt. I actually love babyface Morocco as like a 16-year-old. And I like this match. I gave it 2.5 stars. I think like One Man Gang is a tremendous worker. I mean, that guy was having great matches with freaking Sabu in like 99 or whatever, in ECW for crying out loud. The guy, he's like, the dude had a really cool Facebook page, and he doesn't do it as much anymore, but he used to comment all the time about current wrestling. And it's cool to see one of the older stars not shit on it. Like he was like a Kenny Omega fan and was putting him over constantly. Mm-hmm. So, and putting over Lucha Underground as being neat. So I was listening to One Man Gang's thoughts and coming from a big man who does this type of character really doesn't exist in wrestling anymore, but he's such a damn good worker. I love a Gang like bumping big for Morocco and Morocco. I like him working the leg. It makes perfect sense putting the Gang on the ground. I thought the headbutt to the balls was a great spot by yes. Morocco.
Yes.
And then we actually see some grounding and pounding by Morocco, which is way ahead of its time. And then he's back to the leg. And the One Man Gang is so good at selling that leg. He's so great at it. And, you know, so he's, you know, he sacrifices himself to get the match over and get Morocco over, and just reminds everyone that his leg is fucked up because Morocco's done a hell of a job working it. And I absolutely love the post-match. Super heated angle, good angle to set up Morocco, get Morocco and Reed heated up. I liked it. It's a good piece of business.
There you go.
I concur. No, I concur. Why don't we take a break? Because okay. we have to clean the sludge up from what the fuck we just dealt with. I'm not even going to ask JR what you've thought so far, because I already know. Pete thinks this is the greatest house show of all time, apparently.
I've had one match over 2 stars. You got to be kidding me. I just didn't think it was as bad as you guys. Maybe because Kelly was like, oh, yeah, another shit card for Pete. And so I tried to go in when my expectation level is so low already. I can't get any lower when I'm hearing that.
Anyway, when we return, we will have our big tag main event. Some other interesting matches as well. But first, let's breathe. Because
show sucks crawfish head hard.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Here's a story of two brothers, Rick and Scott. The story of Justin, they're always on top. But behind the time,
All right, Ish, we're back. Back from a little layoff here, looking at a show that makes us wish we were still on a layoff. And that is the January 25th, 1988 MSG show. Sheriff Pete in the house, along with me and Scott. And, you know, last week, Scott, unfortunately, had to cancel on us last minute. I wasn't feeling too great. And the way this show makes me feel is that I want to cancel again right now. Not even continue, but we'll see if things pick up. But also, talking about the way he feels, Michael Jackson, this week in history, the number one song in the country, 1988, January 25th, The Way You Make Me Feel by the King of Pop. And that brings us into the Pop Culture Corner, Scott Criscola.
Thank you, JR. And yes, the King of Pop is the number one, as the updated list came out the previous Saturday, so 2 days before. So the King of Pop, Michael Jackson, from Bad. With you, The Way You Make Me Feel. In Excess at number two with Need You Tonight. At number three, a very special one here, a little Could Have Been by Tiffany. You see Pete at a mall in 1988 coming out of hot tub. There was no Hot Topic in 1988.
They were saying out of a hot tub.
No, I have seen In Excess in a concert. So,
there you go.
What's funny is I actually went to see them. But they were the headliner, but the band I went to go see was Guns N' Roses before they blew up.
Excellent. So that's Tiffany at number three with Could Have Been. Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison at number four. Hazy Shade of Winter by the Bangles at number five. A good little pop list here. Number six, Candle in the Wind by Elton. Of course, Elton John. Of course, the song is from like 74, but then he had that live album from Australia. So
and then
it came
out back again
onto the list.
Whatever, 1997.
Yeah, he changed the words from Princess Diana. Yep. Number seven, Tell It to My Heart by Taylor Dane. We got some minxes in this list. Number eight, Seasons Change by Exposé. There you go, Pete. At number nine, So Emotional by Whitney. I get so emotional. And at number 10, I Want to Be Your Man by Roger.
The Cowboy.
Right, there you go. Cowboy and
I think you're singing that to D'Amato as we went through fucking West Virginia.
Yes. So anyway, there is your top 10 from the previous Saturday that mm-hmm. came out on January 23rd, 1988. And that is The Way You Make Me Feel by Michael Jackson. JR, two movies came out that Friday. The first one, from a fine actress who was in Risky Business. The movie is called And God Created Woman.
Oh, wow. Yes, it's a remake of a 1956 film. French film from 1956. Robin Shea, as a convict in a New Mexico prison, manages to escape but mistakenly hitches a ride in the limo of James Tiernan, a politician who's visiting the prison as part of his campaign for governor. Returns her to the prison in secret while changing back into prison clothes. I believe I saw this in Radish or Visual, the movie. Robin meets Billy Moran, a carpenter yes. and handyman who's doing work in the compound under supervision that's supposed to be keeping him isolated from the female inmates. Billy helps Robin temporarily hide from the guards, and they have sex. And the hijinks could go on from there. Rebecca De Mornay, Vincent Spano, Frank Langella, Donovan Leitch, Judith Chapman, Dave Shelley, and Thelma Houston as a prison singer.
There you go. Whitney's mom. There you go. One is has a number seven song in the country, and one is singing forgettable songs in forgettable movies. All right. And
alive.
our second one, oh, look at this. Oh, this might be one of the kayfabe stories in New Orleans. It is a musical called Puss in Boots.
Best musical. Puss in Boots. Talking about New Orleans again. All right. Let's see here. 1988. There's a lot of films called Puss in Boots. Yes, sometimes sir. Also listed as Canon Movie Tales Puss in Boots, a 1988 musical version of the story of Puss in Boots, starring Christopher Walken as Puss and Jason Connery as the youngest son who's assisted by Puss. Carmela Marner stars as the princess. In this film, Puss transforms from a cat to a man. Just like Pete, when he puts his boots on, transforms back again. Christopher Walken, Jason Connery, Carmela Marner, Amnon Meskin, Michael Schneider as Walpole. Do you want to hear the full songs? I got them all here for A Happy Cat.
I like how you're trying to add some like intensity to it. Puss!
And Glenn Butler is Man in the Window watching the cats.
And you can all watch it on a Catter Day. So there you go. There were your two movies that came out. Football, we are still
God.
Yes. We are still anticipating Super Bowl 22, which will be this coming Sunday. from Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego, your AFC champion Denver Broncos against your NFC champion Washington Redskins. In the NBA, there were only three games on this Monday. Your high scorer was JR, your boy, the round mound of rebound. Charles Barkley had a double-double, 37 points, 15 rebounds, but the Sixers lost in overtime by a point, 118-117, to the Bullets. So that was it in the NBA. Your divisional leaders, the Celtics lead the Atlantic, 28-11. Hawks lead the Central at 29-11. Mavs lead the Midwest at 25-11. And the Lakers lead the Pacific at 30-8. And in hockey, let's see if any of our teams were in action. Only three games on the docket. And actually, the only team in action here, our Place to Be Nation teams, is Mr. Kelly's Flames, who dropped 11 goals in an 11-3 win over the Maple Leafs.
Jesus.
Yeah. The Red Wings lead the Norris with 54 points. Speaking of Kelly's Flames, they lead the Smythe with 64 points. Canadians lead the Adams with 62. And the Flyers lead the Patrick with 56. And sadly, trying to stretch this out so we don't have any more lousy matches, but that is it for your pop culture report. So there you go. Back
all
to
right.
the garden.
Back to the Puss in Boots show that we have going on here. Vince McMahon hops in the ring, brings out Bobby Heenan and the Islanders, who have a dog collar and a leash pretending to kick an invisible dog. Heenan rants about being suspended over a misunderstanding, as they did not take that dog. They simply took the dog backstage and left it there. Bobby vows revenge on the Bulldogs and says this will all end for good tonight. Vince then brings out Jim Duggan, who calls out Harley Race, promises to beat the King here at MSG on this evening. And then Vince brings out Slick and Butch Reed. We get to hear Jive So Bro again, so it's one of the few wins on this night. Slick brags about his dance moves, and then Reed talks about getting involved in the last match. Slick bitches some more about Graham being at ringside without a license, says he was trying to alert the ref that Morocco was using chokeholds when he got up on the apron to get involved. And that brings us to our big time tag match main event here tonight, and that is Hulk Hogan and Bam Bam Bigelow taking on Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Big time match here that tells a lot, with Bigelow and DiBiase inserted right into the main event level, working with Hogan, not messing around. Shot him to the top of the arena. Also interesting to see Virgil in action this soon too. Like, you kind of always remember as a bodyguard for most of these years, but he's wrestling pretty early on. So interesting there. Andre the Giant's out as well, leading Ted and Virgil to, as the boos are massive, just raining down on all of them. Bobby gets to the ring and greets them as well, as this whole partnership is just awesome. Vince gushes over Virgil's physique as Andre settles in on the floor, and the crowd just goes fucking ballistic as Oliver Humperdinck leads out Bigelow and Hogan, this new super mega team put together. DiBiase and Virgil attack immediately, but Hogan and Bammer turn the tide and clean house as Hogan disrobes. DiBiase begs off. Hogan's all over him as we formally get started, battering him from corner to corner. Hogan is possessed and they are smearing Ted's face to the mat with pure rage. Tags Bigelow, who paced Ted with a clothesline. Bobby wonders what Virgil's credibility is as Bigelow just pounds away on him. Tags in Hulk. Hulk keeps beating up and talking shit to Andre along the way. Andre makes his presence known, though, a moment later when he trips Hogan and allows Ted to go to work with elbow drops and chokeholds. Andre lands a shot as well as Bobby's yucking it up. Virgil tags in and lands a blow off the middle rope. We get more talk about his physique. Virgil lays in some strikes and Andre chokes away where he can as Hulk falls further into trouble. Ted comes back as Vince reminds us about what's coming up on February 5th for Hogan, what lies ahead in his match with Andre the Giant. Hogan rolls Ted outside and Hogan rolls outside and Ted follows him and slugs away until Andre shoves Hogan back in violently. Virgil and Ted trade off working until Hulk until Ted grinds a chin lock. Hogan fires up and breaks the hold, but a second later, both men go down with a double clothesline. They recover and tag, and the crowd has gone bonkers as Bigelow storms in and beats on Virgil with his power offense. Bigelow drops an elbow, followed by a Hogan leg drop and a Bammer splash for the hot win. Andre then gets in the ring and just wrecks Bigelow and Hogan with headbutts. Andre looked awesome here, sprinting in the ring and smashing both men. DiBiase and Virgil batter Hogan outside, but Bigelow recovers, dropkicks Andre from behind in a great spot. Hogan then grabs two chairs and gets in the ring as Andre flips out of ringside and gets held back. Great match and aftermath. I thought they were molten hot. The match is filled with energy and heat, and all four guys are busting their ass. Andre fantastic here, too. The whole thing is just tremendous. And it's a great hard sell for February 5th. Just really good stuff. Bigelow continues to become a star. DiBiase is top heel, and it's all shown and showcased here tonight. I went 3.5 for this, Pete. I was really excited with this one.
Yeah, I went 3.25. I'm with you. And I'm glad you touched on Andre, because I thought his presence here, it's a cliche. It was larger than life. But, I mean, he added so much to the match, and just his aura being there added to the layers of the rematch in February. Absolutely love the shine by the faces. They're standing tall. And DiBiase is just pinballing big time for him. Again, Andre stuff, tripping up the Hulkster. Love that, because, you know, the heat's there between those two. It sets up the heat. I thought the match was structured very well. Crowd was super hot. And it's kind of neat. I know the footnote would be, you know, it's kind of neat to see Bigelow here in the main event. And, you know, he'd be gone by the end of the year, too. And he's kind of wondering if he would have gotten over as much as they thought he was going to be by his position here, would the Savage run ever would have transformed? It kind of makes you wonder if Bigelow would have caught fire. Would they have put the belt on him instead of Savage?
I think that I gave this 4 stars. This whole package is fucking amazing. And for all the bullshit that we hear, and it's talked about a lot on the Andre doc on HBO. For those that any of the discussions that Andre didn't want to put Hogan over and didn't want to do this, and he was, you know, really hurting, you couldn't see it. I mean, he was just an animal. He deserves all the credit in the world for just helping put this whole story over as good as he did. I mean, he was just a beast. I want to say I almost like heel Andre as a wrestler more than I liked babyface Andre as a wrestler. I feel like Andre had more, again, with what he could do. I mean, he was in fucking agony at this point, but his heel work is just so amazing. And again, with what limited movement he had, he was all over the place here. And DiBiase is just a tremendous heat magnet. And like Pete said, pinballing and bouncing around and being just a great foil. And Vince just overly loving Virgil's look. I think he said like 3 times, look at that physique on Virgil. So maybe you just want to say Virgil a lot to, you know,
it's
get the rib
meat
over. But
sauce.
Bigelow, definitely. I mean, obviously, anytime you put anybody with Hogan in a tag, you're obviously – they're doing it for a reason. It's not an accident. So it was evident that at this moment – we won't look too far ahead, obviously. But at this moment, you're obviously thinking that Bigelow is someone that's destined for big things. Perhaps maybe he's a guy positioned to unseat the Honky Tonk Man as Intercontinental Champion. Who knows? But at this moment, you're thinking he's you know, the Puss in Boots cat's meow, because he's just so over right now. And it shows. I mean, it's evident. Just the whole package was great. 4 stars for me. It really does pump you up for what you're about to see at on February 5th in Indianapolis. And that really – what happened tonight really puts that over and hammers it home, you know, how special what we're in for and how special it's going to be when that happens. But great main event, great crowd, 4 stars for me, JR. Just a tremendous match with a lot of heat and really puts the storyline over continuously that Andre is just hungry to take Hogan out and take that belt. And after what we saw at the Rumble, it was a good 1-2 punch to keep that feud going. So
but it's kind of amazing with Bigelow, because in 2 months' time, he ends up wrecking his knee, and then it becomes an afterthought in the company, even by Mania, where I think he loses in the first round in the tournament, right, to Gang?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it's amazing that at the moment he was obviously thought of pretty high to be in this situation.
Oh, they definitely had plans for him. Then the injury, and then he went became nothing, and really would come back. You know, then he ends up being this journeyman worker for the rest of his career.
Yeah, it's a bummer, but anyway, great main event, JR. Great main event.
I do. You mentioned cats and meow. Sadly, get me all wispy.
Yes. Unfortunately, this match does not get me wispy.
But I think Pete's point's a good one with what Bigelow could have been, because they clearly had big plans for him. I mean, he's getting monster pops, and as Hogan's buddy, is like a perfect role for him at this point. And so Pete, you kind of talk about that, but what do you think, too, about DiBiase, Pete, already kind of being up at this level, too? Like, they did not waste any time with him, either.
No, he was the glue of this match, really, in a way, because, I mean, he has Virgil as his partner, for crying out loud, who isn't going to be carrying anything at this point. He worked Memphis, but before that, I don't know what his history was. He might have worked some Kansas City, but yeah, he wasn't ready for a main event in Madison Square Garden, for crying out loud. And yeah, DiBiase right in the thick of things immediately, and it's almost like they shot him a little too soon, because he was another guy. I mean, he was always relevant for the company. But it felt like his hottest run was his first part of this year, and then with the Savage run. And then after that, he'd had other good feuds, but nothing that captured the Savage and Hogan stuff.
All right. Let's get to our next match. Another tag match here. Sadly, not quite the star power that we just witnessed. That is the Young Stallions taking on Barry Horowitz and Steve Lombardi. Barry Horowitz, first time we've seen him, born March 24th, 1960, St. Petersburg, Florida. Horowitz trained as a professional wrestler under Boris Malenko in Tampa, Florida for 18 months, debuted in 1979 in the Florida Indies, went to work for the WWWF, Jim Crockett Sr.'s NWA Mid-Atlantic, and promotions in Canada and Puerto Rico. Horowitz eventually joined Championship Wrestling from Florida as Jack Hart on July 23rd, 85 in Tampa, defeated Mike Graham at a tournament final to win the vacant Florida heavyweight title. Held the title until September 2nd, 1985, where he lost to Kendall Windham, and remained in CWF for 2 years, managed by heels such as Percy Pringle, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, wrestled the stretcher Jack Hart, and then joined the WWF in 1987. Underrated worker, a guy that, as we'll see, will get shine here and there, but still, in this match, on this card, not something we probably wanted to see. The hot streak has ended. Vince tells us Paul Roma hurt his knee last night, so they're continuing that storyline from the Rumble. Vince grills Bobby on Matilda as we get underway. Bobby says the Stallions have been called the dream team, or called the team of the 90s. Powers and Lombardi open up this cooldown match. We get some basic work from both. Horowitz tags in and Powers grabs him, works the arm as Bobby leaves the booth to tend to the King. Roma tags in and gingerly works the arm. We reset with Lombardi and Powers as Al says Steve has some awesome power, but Vince says he takes a lot of chances. The Stallions start to quick tag and work together to dominate. Powers grabs a near fall on a body press and they work the arm. Lombardi finally stems the assault with an inverted atomic drop. It tags in Barry, who goes to work on Powers, hitting a nice suplex and a leg drop. Lombardi and Horowitz mix in some basic strikes, pin attempts, but Powers keeps alive. Horowitz goes to a chin lock as Vince and Al talk more about Matilda, who they say is in a rough condition but responding to treatment and may be a while for recovery. Lombardi shows off his power with a hard slam for two, and then Horowitz goes back to a chin lock as we meander along. Both men collide, and Roma comes in to start clearing house, but the crowd does not give a shit. They've totally cooled off after the last match. Powers gets a power slam on Lombardi to put us out of our misery. Real bland, no heat or energy, just a match. Lombardi and Horowitz worked hard enough and looked okay, but this just went nowhere and just kind of went on and just no progression really to it, just a series of moves. I went a half a star for some of the effort here, Scott, but not much else.
Yeah, your match time. By the way, the main event match time was 9:26. It felt like it was flying. This was not. This match was 13:33. Yeah. Why don't they make the other? I don't get it. Why don't they make the other match 13:33? Mm. I gave it a half star. I mean, it's pretty meandering. Obviously, the Stallions can do good against talent that can help them along. But when you get these two fucking schlubs, you're only going to get so much. So, I mean, the Stallions are a fine team to watch. They're good, you know, centerpiece for a show. But I just can't see them having any kind of sustained run in the high end of the tag division. I just don't think they're experienced enough. And as nice guys as they are, good looking guys, good physiques and everything, I mean they just don't have that charisma. So I don't know how far they were going to go, but I mean this match is fine for what it was. But Pete, clearly this is a team, you know, that's a decent attraction. but nothing that you could really see sustained, at least from this perspective.
I agree. I give it a half star too. The Stallions, they're like, you know, they're a handsome tag team. They're like the equivalent of what 1993 Tom Zank and Johnny Gunn, where they're just there. And there's like so many better tag teams than the babyface tag teams in the division. You have Strikeforce, which is better. You have the Bulldogs, which are better. You know, so these are just, you know, just they're like the, you know, they're the C-loop team, and or wherever you want to put them. But yeah, they're not a team that's going to win the titles. They're not good enough to carry matches. If they're in with good enough opponents, they can be carried. Like, I think the Brainbusters did okay with them at some point, but for the most part, the Stallions were just green. And and behind the scenes, neither one of them, I don't think they cared for each other. Roma and Powers, they're always both trying to outshine the other person, so that's not a good setting to have. And yeah, this was kind of like a mess. Really didn't, you know, nothing really happened.
Yeah, just a lot of matches that just fucking exist. I mean, tonight, you know, it's like there's nothing to them.
Good way to word it.
No, they just exist. I mean, that's it. It's like there's no,
yeah,
there's no meaning, rhyme, or reason to a lot of them. They're just there. And usually we get a couple of those, but this just feels like a proliferation of them tonight. It's just like, it's just every time you turn around, there's another one like that.
Well,
so
it just feels like Kelly dumps on me with all, you know, all the crappy shows that he doesn't want to do.
That's true. We do blame him.
This seems like another bad MSG show I'm sitting through.
All right, we get the Nestle Crunch of the night. That's Bam Bam Bigelow press slamming Virgil at the end of the match. So there you go. Enjoy that. Reliving the one good moment of the night. All right, it takes us to our next match, and it is a feud still raging on from 1988, and that is Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on the King of Harley Race. Duggan's out first to a pop and all the hoes. Race and Bobby Heenan march out next to the Regal Music, get some stalling and playing to the crowd. Al talks about how over Hacksaw was in France. Race lands off first blow and punches away in the corner, but Duggan slugs right back at him before sending him careening over the top with a nasty bump. Race returns as Duggan's all over him, shooting him hard to the post, shoulder first as the King is rattled. Harley goes into his tights, but Duggan flips Race back into the ring, and then Duggan grabs a front face lock. Race pushes free and drops Hacksaw with a shoulder block, and then flops into Duggan's crotch with a headbutt. Duggan recovers and slugs away in the corner, dropping Race for two. Duggan goes to the face lock, but Race blocks it, cracks Duggan with a kick as Vince calls Harley a wily veteran. Race gets two off of belly to belly and then another stiff pile driver. Duggan fires up again and lands a series of fist drops to Harley. Race dodges a knee and eventually knocks Hacksaw to the floor with a right hand. Race follows out, but Duggan dodges a headbutt. Race splats off the floor in a real nasty spot. Duggan hammers away inside, but Race ducks a shot and backdrops Hacksaw to the floor. Race follows and spikes Duggan to the apron before sliding back inside. Race keeps knocking Duggan off the apron. Hacksaw eventually goes under the ring and shows up on the other side behind him, drops him with the right hand. Duggan drops Harley with a clothesline and shoulder blocks him back outside, where Harley returns and yanks Duggan to the apron. They scuffle on the mat. Race tries for a cross body block off the top, but Duggan rolls through and gets the win. Race attacks after the bell, but Duggan chases him off with a 2x4. This was pretty fun in a, like a fucking sloppy, messy way. Lots of brawling and strikes, but it felt legit too. Like just a brawl. Like it wasn't, nothing felt fake about it. It was just two guys clobbering each other. I thought the big spots and gross bumps by Harley kept this hot too. He took some real gross ones here. Fun match. Mm-hmm. Duggan stays hot and Race is spinning his tires now, but I mean, he's still out there killing himself in these matches, which is nuts. I went 2 stars for this, mainly for the Harley bumps, Scott.
Yeah, your match time 10:50. I gave this 2 stars too. Actually, I can admit and say it. It was one of the better Duggan matches that I have ever watched. This goes back to the Slammies when they're throwing coleslaw at each other and whatever shit backstage. But I thought it was a good combination of guys. I'm sure these two wrestled in Mid-South probably if Harley, you know, blew through in the early 80s. But it worked out. I think, you know, Duggan is a very, I'll say sloppy, I won't say that, but he's you know, he's pretty snug, and he'll, you know, he throws some good power strikes. And Harley at this point is just having fun and throwing himself around, making money. He's doing a great job at his age to chuck himself around like that. It's crazy. But a fun feud, good thing to keep both guys doing. You're right. JR, he's kind of spinning his wheels. I mean, he had the big feud with JYD. And he had his few matches with, you know, Hogan for the title. But right now he's just kind of filling holes and spots. And but this was a fun match, Pete. It was a fun little kind of power sprint. Although 1050, I guess, is not really a sprint, but seemed like it for these two guys. I actually enjoyed this match more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I'm with you. I give it 2 stars also. I mean, I'm with whatever you guys say. I thought Race was the glue and taking these big bumps. And I mean, that missing the headbutt on the floor was just flat out nasty. I mean, anything could happen on that miss cue. And I thought Doug was fine, throwing punches, doing, you know, minimal stuff. But I thought Race bumped big for him. And when he was on offense, was credible. And then when Duggan took to control, I thought he was great, bumping and feeding for him. And the I thought it was chaotic. It felt like they didn't like each other. So we got it. Bumps, you know. As always, I always win, so I got to watch Duggan WWF like 8 trillion times better in Mid-South. But that's the difference between, you know, cartoon versus Blood and Guts organization.
Yeah, and I mean, early Duggan here is kind of your best glimpse of it before he really kind of degenerates more into a, you know, cartoony character. Like, so you still get blips of that Duggan right here in 87 and 88.
Yeah.
So it's short-lived. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so another a pretty fun match, one of the better ones of the night, and Race is always fun to watch fuck around. So, all right, here we go. Hillbilly Jim taking on the Outlaw, Ron Bass, in our next match. Another rough one on paper. Bass comes out and shit-talks the fans, as usual. Jim jigs out to a lukewarm reaction as Al calls him a character, and Vince calls him a riot. Bass attacks to the bell and works Jim over in the corner with strikes. Jim battles back and stomps around as Bass begs off. Jim gets a one count on a big splash, and Bass bails. Bass tries to grab his whip, but Jim yanks it away and taunts Bass with it. Bass returns. We get some messing around between the two as they trade control. Bass eventually takes over fully and methodically batters Jim around. Jim bows up after a couple minutes and clotheslines Bass for two, but Bass dodges a splash and hits his finisher for the win. This was trash, heatless and plodding, nothing to it, and we are just circling the fucking drain here tonight because this is another match that's not getting it done. And, you know, I've liked Hillbilly in spots. Bass has had some moments, obviously, that really good match with Tito we saw. But overall, I mean, this is just terrible. I went dud on this one, Pete.
Yeah, I went dud also. And it's the third cowboy gimmick we have on the show tonight, which you should only have one cowboy gimmick on a show at most, especially in New York, where I think you should have zero.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just terrible. There's nothing. It's not even worth my breath talking about this match.
Scott?
Your time, 5:32. Perfect length for this one, served its purpose. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't stellar. But these are, at this stage of the game, these are the kind of things you, you do with Hillbilly Jim, Hall of Famer now, Hillbilly Jim, you know, give him these quick shots, put guys over, and that's what he's supposed to do now. And again, 5:32 is perfect length to do it. So that, I like Ron Bass. There'll be more from him in 88. But yeah, this was like legit filler to, you know, to just kind of get ready for the last match of the night. But, yeah, that's about it. It's good use of Hillbilly Jim, and Ron Bass gets the win. And, Fink comes out, JR, before we go to our last match.
He sure does. He runs down the card, for next month as usual and sets up the stage for February. So, hopefully more to look forward to there than here. We'll see. But for now, this is what we're stuck dealing with. And that brings us to our main event of the evening, or I should say our final match of the evening. We already had our main event. And that is the British Bulldogs taking on the Islanders. Big match to close things out. Hopefully maybe save the show. We'll see. Feud's been raging on for a while now. The Islanders and Bobby kidnap Matilda, pissing off Davey and Dynamite. The mocking continues as Bobby walks out with a dog leash and collar leading the way. We open with an immediate brawl as the Bulldogs go right at the Islanders, sending them scurrying to the floor. The Bulldogs disrobe and spend some time tagging in and out, punishing Haku. Dynamite gets a 2 off a nice pile driver, and the beating continues. Davey works the arm of Haku for a bit as things slow down. Vince says they're trying to prove a point on behalf of Matilda, and Al says she must really want to be here at Steve Revenge tonight. Haku finally lands a shot and cuts down Davey, and the Islanders gain their bearings, go to work with strikes and chokes. Davey stays strong, kicking out a one-pin attempt, and then tagging Dynamite, who comes in hot. and rattles both Islanders before cutting down Haku with a great back elbow smash for two. Dynamite lands a knee off the middle rope for a near fall, but Tama makes a save. Haku catches Dynamite with a chop to the on a charge and then tags Tama, who hits a blow off the top. Haku lands a real nasty chop to the chest and then kicks away as Dynamite tries his best to stay alive while the crowd gets fired up. Al questions why Haku takes so long during his attack. Haku grabs a front face lock and fends off a comeback and tags Tama, who works a chin lock. They keep trading off the chin lock, fighting off comebacks and grinding down Dynamite, who eventually gets a desperation double clothesline, and Al implores him to get out of there and tag, which he finally does. Davey cleans house as the crowd is hot and bothered. Davey gets two off a nasty pile driver, loads up a power slam and drops Haku with it. Tama makes a save, but Davey gets him with a power slam too. Davey then grabs the dog collar from Bobby and beats on both Islanders with it, drawing the DQ for the loss and giving the Islanders the win. The beating keeps going on. The crowd is just loving it as the Bulldogs are finally getting revenge. This was fine. Not the best work. A lot of slow downtime in there. Dynamite at least looks better now than he had, so he's probably feeling a little bit healthier. The crowd is real hot, even with the shitty finish, which is fine to keep the feud going. Good match, but really not enough to save this turd of a show to close things out. I went 2.5, Scott.
Yeah, your final match time, 15:35, so pretty lengthy last match main event. I gave it I gave the Hillbilly match a dud. I actually gave this 3 stars. I thought it was pretty good. It did have some slow spots, but I feel like the Islanders and the Bulldogs are good teams that work well together. I thought it was kind of a perfectly placed last match compared to anything else on this show. I'm trying to think, and I'm curious your thoughts, Pete. I feel like the Bulldogs still don't quite look dated yet. Like, we've talked about, like, JYD and some of these other guys that have been hot in 85, 86, and you know, now at this point they're kind of flat. But I don't quite see that out of the Bulldogs. Like JR said, you know, Dynamite's looking a little bit better than he did in the tail end of 87 when he definitely looked hurt. First off, your thoughts on the match, and secondly, do the Bulldogs still look fresh to you at this point?
I think they do look fresh because they're getting a different gear. You know, they're going with they're more modern. People have a lot of remember them with the Britannica on the back of the trunks and stuff, as opposed to their older trunks. So it feels fresher in a way. So they actually updated their image, so it's more for the times. I wasn't a big fan of the match. I gave it like 2.25. I liked the Bulldogs attacking early, and Tama bumped big for it. They're cutting a good pace early on. Nice shine by the Bulldogs. But once they put the heat on Davey Boy, it got pretty boring. When the Islanders were doing nerve holds, and it got slow. And then we got a hot tag to Dynamite. He gets cut off, and they slap on the nerve hold that lasted like forever on Dynamite. Their opening first few minutes felt like these guys could have a good match, like they had with like Strikeforce, where I thought those matches were just awesome. And they had like one of the most underrated feuds of all time in the company. This like started there, but didn't even come close. They just got lazy in the middle and towards the end, and ended up being flat for me. But you know, it just shows, though, in a way, the Bulldogs might be, their work might be getting dated, because, I mean, Strikeforce's matches with the the Islanders blew everything away. I mean, they didn't have anything near as bad as this match, which wasn't a bad match, per se. But I still felt like the Bulldogs, you still positioned them as a team that could win the belts, but you didn't think they were going to win them anymore. I think they're more, at this point, we're putting over teams to get ready for the champions and stuff, or a good challenge for the belts here and there. But I still thought they had a place in the company.
Yeah, I agree with Pete. They definitely had a place still. And yeah, no, you're right, Scott. They don't feel dated. I think a lot of it, too, has to do with Dynamite being healthy. I mean, when healthy, they're still super over and can work with anyone. And I think part of it, too, is they haven't been really overexposed. Like, they've been around for a while, but because of the injuries, they've kind of come and gone a little bit here and there, and Davey did some single stuff or worked with other guys. So they haven't really been, like, hammered down your throat a lot during this run. They had that long feud with the Dream Team that went on forever, but it still feels fresh to see them mix it up with teams like the Islanders and whatnot. So, yeah, I would agree. And this feud's been fine, too. It's eaten time up for both teams. So, yeah, so we're done. That's it for this show. All right, so why don't we do some awards, if you can even call it that. Razzies.
Or lack thereof.
Razzies tonight. all right, match of the night for me is a pretty obvious one. That's Hogan and Bigelow versus DiBiase and Virgil. Virgil, as
I don't think
Mark
there's any doubt. Virgil. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely by far the cream of the crop.
Okay, so this would be a hot one. The Cousin Jr., lots of contenders here tonight. But I went with Omar Atlas and Dale Wolfe. It was the most meaningless match I think we've ever seen on the shows. And both guys sucked. Everything about it sucked. Like, I could not get into it at all. It meant nothing. It was so useless. That's my choice. What do you guys have?
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's utter garbage. I mean, we have like three other matches that probably would come close, but that one had other problems besides just the fact the match itself sucked. It was just so irrelevant.
I mean, the crowd started booing it, for crying out loud.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
Really brutal.
That's definitely it.
All right, our Hogan Award for the MVP of the night. Again, this is a guy that I've given to a couple times, and most of them he's not even like involved in the show. But Andre the Giant, again, I thought stood out the most on this evening. Yes, he was not in the match, but he was actively involved in it, and his attack at the end was amazing. The heat was so great on him, and he looked so spry when he jumped in the ring and started headbutting everyone. I thought he looked like just the megastar he is tonight.
I took the words right out of my mouth. I agree. Andre I don't want to say he's carrying the feud because he's not. I mean, he's obviously there's a lot of heavy lifting that everybody's doing, but he's been amazing, absolutely amazing since coming back before November.
I have a tied with Andre and Ted DiBiase. I thought both of them were keys to carrying that match.
Okay.
On the heel side.
Okay.
All right. Next is the Uncle Elmer Award, and that is the worst work of the night. And again, a lot of stiff competition on this evening. But yes. I thought Dusty Wolf was like the worst. I thought he was fucking putrid in there. Omar Atlas was trying to carry him. It tells you how bad it was. He looked lost in that stupid cape and everything else that went along with it.
Comforter. Afghan. Yeah, he was a drizzler. Although you could have like a 9-way tie for everybody in the first hour of the show if you want to. But no, Dale Wolf is definitely the worst. Dusty, Dale, whatever the hell his name is.
I'm going to go with Omar Atlas just because he won and they booed him on a victory.
It's not his fault. He should never been in that position.
Yeah.
All right, best moment of the night. I went with Andre's attack again. This is the third straight show where I've had Andre attacking someone as the moment of the night. So ever since 88 started, Andre attacking Hogan basically has been my moment. But he was awesome doing that. I thought that was the best part of the show easily.
I agree. More
yeah,
Andre.
I'll agree.
Okay. I mean, really, since mid-87, we've had Andre win a lot of these for not even wrestling. Just Andre arrives. Andre arrives. Andre refuses to leave. Andre attacks Hogan. Andre's an asshole. Andre attacks Hogan and Bigelow. Like, those are all his winning these.
Yeah.
So he's just had a lot of cool moments. All right, the Morocco Award for most juiced. Again, some good competition tonight, but I had to go with the namesake. Don Morocco takes it home again. He is just piling up the awards here at this point for this juice award, but he was the biggest guy in there.
Yeah, I'll go Morocco.
Yeah, Hogan's always a nominee, but Morocco, whenever he's on camera, definitely takes a cake.
All right, and our final grade on this brutal, putrid show, one of the worst we've seen. We had one really good match and a couple other sufficient matches, but the rest was trash. Vince was fine enough, but not able to really carry this card. I think we kind of missed Gorilla and Bobby throughout this card and made it save some of this. Vince just doesn't have that innate ability to kind of get us through matches like this. So I went 2.5 on this show, which is one of the lowest grades I've given, but it's pretty bad. What do you think, Scott?
I'll give it a 3. The main event really does carry it. And I did have to admit, I did like Duggan and Harley. I thought that was pretty good. And the main event I liked, or the last match, I should say, Bulldogs and Islanders was really good. So I'll give it a 3. But it's an easy 3, but nothing higher than that. I mean, the rest of the stuff is utter shit, Pete.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3.5. I didn't despise the first two matches like you guys did. I enjoyed the Hogan match. I enjoyed the Harley Race match. I enjoyed the Morocco gang match. I thought the Bulldogs Islanders was okay. Then we got some crap. But yeah, but nothing. That's the thing. It wasn't anything that saved the show for me. But I'll give it a 3.5 because at least a lot of those matches that were bad were actually pretty short. Like, you know, we had Hillbilly and Bass go 5 minutes. Casey and Estrada went 10. You know, nothing too terribly long. So it wasn't like the. I've seen some worse garden shows that you guys have stuck me on. So,
trash, poor Pete the Trash Man is going to come on here and watch this crap.
Changing my sheriff to Trash Man.
Good old Duke the Dumpster. Yeah. All right, so that'll do it tonight. Mercifully, we are done. We'll be back next week, as of now. That's the plan anyway. Checking out the main event, which will be significantly better. I hope. We'll see who is our guest that week. It's still, got to finalize things. So we'll be here talking some Hogan Andre. Looking forward to that. Scott, anything else you want to plug besides your main event 100?
This week, Nate and I will have our next installment of our bringing down our top 100 GWWE wrestlers of all time. So the next chapter will come out. Our next part will be out this week. And then episode 101 next week, where we will recap this coming Sunday's Backlash pay-per-view and do our next TNA Classic pay-per-view recap too. So check that out, sir.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to say before we – I want to actually steal your thunder just slightly, but I have to say you and Chad did an exceptional first episode of the of your Monday Warzone show. Very, very good job. I was very impressed. Nicely done.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It is the Wrestling War Zone, the Monday Night Wars retrospective podcast. Yes. It started with Chad Campbell. Scott kind of picking up where we left off with the written Vintage Vaults in late 95. So we started with episode one. We looked at the 9/11/95 Raw Nitro. And then episode two, which dropped on Friday, looked at Fall Brawl 95. So that was a fun one to talk about. A lot of nonsense there. So episode three, we'll get back to the Monday Nights. We'll look at the 9/18 Raw Nitro. It's a lot of fun. I've been wanting to do a full show with Chad. We've never really done anything before together, and it's been a lot of fun. It's a pretty quick listen, so check that out. Appreciate everyone who's shared feedback so far. Also, had a newest Jeff Learns Wrestling last week as well. I was a busy boy making my return to the ranks, and Jeff and I had planned on doing WrestleMania 4. Jeff had some personal stuff come up, was not able to watch it, which we talked about on the show, and instead, Scott, we talked about what occurred 7 years ago today. And that was the Michael J. Caboose beer pong tournament that you and I were part of as the Mega Powers. Yes. So Jeff and I chronicled that entire ordeal, plus some other personal anecdotes in there, too. So I appreciate the feedback on that as well. We weren't sure how it would be received since it was kind of outside the format of the show, but we get a lot of good comments. It was fun to relive. We had a lot of laughs. We got heated again over it. So it was good. Good times.
Good.
Check that out. And, of course, some other shows that have dropped. You mentioned the Talk and Pop New Orleans weekend recap. That was a lot of fun reliving it. I was supposed to be part of that, but I was not feeling too well that night, so I had a bow out of that as well. I missed it. I was sad, but it's worth checking out for sure. Mm-hmm. Also wanted to make sure you all check out the spoiler-loaded podcast with Tim Capel, with Nick Duke, with Jennifer Smith breaking down Infinity War. They went a long time. It's basically half a Beyond the Sheets, I think, but a Beyond Between the Sheets, Beyond Between the Sheets.
Beyond Between the Sheets.
Yes. Definitely Between the Sheets. So check that out, there. And they, have some interesting takes. If you've seen the movie, if you haven't, you better hold off. But after you go see it, check out the podcast again. They go real deep, lots of spoilers there. So be sure to check that out. And plenty of other stuff out there as well in all of our feeds, Pro Wrestling Only, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop. Pete, anything you got going on you want to talk about other than the Bruno Pod?
Hey, you can check out the Bruno Pod. You have follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. My buddy Kane Justice just got announced for the Scenic City Invitational. If you can, go on Twitter and like and retweet that thing. Show him some support. He's going to hopefully break out. I think Scenic City could be one of those big breaking points for him to be a guy that people really know on the indies. He's had a great first year. Guy was putting on 3-star matches on a weekly basis on CWF Worldwide, and a guy has a lot of potential. He's a great underneath, great heel, swarmy. Just want to punch him in the mouth. So show him some love.
Check it out. Scenic City coming in August, and Kane will be part of that. Anything else, Pete?
That's about it.
All right. We'll be back next week. Until then, everyone take care. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for staying patient during our little break. Hopefully be back in the flow now going forward every week for the foreseeable future until I decide to retire. So until then, that's Pete. That's Scott. I'm out. We'll talk to you soon.
Salaries. Ah, sounds like a plan. And I will expand hip-hop as well. Might even kick a little impromptu to stop you weaklings. Speaking things foreign to the human ear that you will hear now, whether you like it or not. My plots bring a little life from the situation and all the stipulations. This is you wasting time on your pawns. It was planned like that, but we can fight back like David Horowitz and say we want no more of this and put it in a cryogenic status. We place it with the latest in technology. Hip-hop policies that demolish your follies. Ali, Ali, oxen free, get off of me. You can't see this. Your defeatist attitude will get you nowhere fast. I tend to my task, cause life is a blast when you know what you're doing. Best to know what you're doing for your life get ruined. Life is a thrill when your skill is developed. If you ain't got a skill or trade, then shut the hell up. Life is a blast when you know what you're doing. Best to know what you're doing for your life get ruined. Life is a thrill when your skill is developed. If you ain't got a skill or trade, then shut the hell up. Don't even start on the next man. Let's scan your situation. Used to have no patience. Flip on niggas, rob niggas, even family. All the way up to your moms, you can't stand to be in the house. But when you kicked out, you begging to come back in. Then the same old skit happens. You say you rapping, but you don't know the essence. Just hoes slapping, but the caps is your message. Plus, every time I put some skrill down, you steal it. If that's your way of teaching me a lesson, I don't feel it. Your raps reflect your life, and that's a shame. Cause the way it sounded, you must think that it's a game. I can see you came from the ghetto, but you came from the meadow. You really need to let that go. You got no respect for hip-hop, and you trying to rhyme. Buying your time, and I find it a crime. I even tried to bury the hatchet, man. Cause we all African. You wanna be a rapper, start practicing. You can't even flow right. Spend most of your time fucking hoes, getting in fights. Hanging out with no mission in life. And you're missing your life, and you'll be missing out on life. I won't sweat you for that G you stole. Cause if you're still alive, I'll be there to see you, foe. Told you life is a blast when you know what you're doing. Best to know what you're doing for your life get ruined. Life is a thrill when your skill is developed. If you ain't got a skill or a trade, then shut the hell up. Life is a blast when you know what you're doing. Best to know what you're doing for your life get ruined. Life is a thrill when your skill is developed. If you ain't got a skill or trade, shut the hell up. You can be a rapper, an actor, a gun clapper, a comedian providing laughter as a bachelor, a pastor of a chapter, a doctor, a lawyer, a fireman, hired hand, whether boy or girl, it's your world, your future, you control it. Whatever you do early on is how you mold it. I record it, sold it, told it to you. Mr. Dell wouldn't tell you nothing that ain't true, because life is a blast when you know what you're doing. Best to know what you're doing for your life get ruined. Life is a thrill when your skill is developed. If you ain't got a skill or trade, then shut the hell up. Think you're able to label the hyro sound? You still haven't found a comparable variable. You think you're able to label the hyro sound? You still haven't found a comparable variable.